I got Broadway style and Hollywood looks. Got a flash and a glare like I jumped right out of the comic books. Hulk fist with a mean right hook. At least that's what I tell myself. Scratch that, hey, listen up, it's Wolfman and just Lane too, with some issues that we gotta get through. Hey, hey, it's just another day in the life of your favorite basket cases, but it's going down, we're telling you all about it. Scratch that, the Approximate Hour.
Welcome to the Approximate Hour with Wolfman Dave and Ghislaine, a fun little podcast about the adventures of aspiring artists.
We have a lot of fun planned for today's show. Our geeky gossip with the guys topic today is Back to the Future.
What a perfect subject to pick for our opening podcast on October 21st, 2015.
By the way, that's the date. Everybody make a note and or just watch the freaking movie.
No, seriously, watch the movie, guys. October 21st, 2015. Why on earth have I seen memes for like 5 years telling me that I should have had a hoverboard already?
Don't get me excited by telling me it's tomorrow when it's not tomorrow.
Gosh darn it, October 21st, 2015, watch the movie! Ah! I'm done.
Ah!
Okay. No, but really, we had an actual argument about that, didn't we?
It nearly came to blows.
And everyone was saying a different date. And finally, we pull out the movie. Actually, we watch both movies, thank you very much.
Well, we watched the first one, and that was spurring the conversation. That, like, wait a minute, when was that date?
Oh, dear goodness.
I have an idea. Let's just watch the freaking movie. And we watched the movie, we made it to the point where they actually enter that date, and then we didn't watch any further, because the argument had been settled.
We were so done.
Like gentle people.
And let's be honest, the first movie's the best anyway. Okay, and
I hate you. I hate you so much right now.
And today's special guest is actress, model, cosplayer, Mac Bouvet.
Our performance today will be a fun sampling of music, which we shall be singing for an upcoming wedding this month.
And on Take Your Health Back, we shall be discussing the real dangers of food allergies to preservatives and additives.
Finally, our little misfit Genie the Giant Killer from Bad Gas Pal is joining us for a little life advice later on in the segment. But for now, let's begin with this week's adventures.
Oh, and what an adventure it's been.
It was strange.
Well,
I'm not sure I'm comfortable talking about it yet.
Actually, I don't think it was quite as perverse as last time we went to San Diego.
Which, again, was not as perverse as you told me it was gonna be. Strangely enough.
They were on their best behavior. We headed down to San Diego this
week. Am I the weird square that shows up and everybody has to tighten it up? Or
Maybe. Or oh, maybe they're man. Just getting older and having kids. That could be it. So we head down to San Diego. And, you know, part of being a producer is being able to switch hats a lot.
Especially part of being a producer in a little entertainment company, which is staffed by 3 people. Each of those people has to take up a lot of the burden on their own and wear a lot of hats, as you said, and be able to switch roles with great fluidity.
Which we're getting better at. Yeah.
I'm still a solid. I gotta work my way up to liquid.
Right. So we head down on Friday, and we spend most of Friday night, I think, just getting ourselves acclimated, right?
Yeah, we were not expecting to do any work on Friday. We wanted to be up bright and early on Saturday to pound a lot of pavement. Because the purpose of this trip was marketing.
Right.
And especially, it was marketing in this context basically meant we have a giant box full of flyers and posters and, well, what we call our propaganda to distribute to the townsfolk of the fine city of San Diego. Going to local businesses to drop off flyers that'll be in a visible place, putting posters in people's windows. It is all very cool and very time-consuming.
But if that was the only thing we were doing, that would make sense, right? Because, I mean, that's going to take up a lot of time of your day, going from place to place, going from plaza to plaza, yeah. Putting out these flyers.
I call it the promotion gun, where you just kind of wander around places and shoot promotion into them.
It's interesting, though, because more people will take your flyers than you expect, but we ended up actually having to do more than that. We were going to different locations that we thought were good for our target market, like communities, and saying, okay, hey, we have a show. Here's our flyers. Please pass them out to people in your community. And they were, you know, as responsive as they were.
And
you know?
And to not go into excessive detail, we're doing a show, we're promoting a show that takes place in 1940. It's a noir show that that features, you know, gangsters and really the zeitgeist of the time. The real essence of a noir film.
So it attracts two markets. Right? It attracts the young that are interested in this era.
The old who are really interested in classic noir film, which I would say is about 10 to 25% of the real interest that we were going for,
mm-hmm.
With the remainder being taken up by the over 40 set. You know, either people whose parents lived it or they lived it.
Sure.
And so we were, what do you call this exactly? Direct marketing? No, direct marketing is junk mail.
Right. But that step back from that, but not very different.
Targeted marketing.
Targeted marketing. Yeah. Some of it was face-to-face. And of course, that's not the only thing we were going to do, because we also had to visit friends.
Uh-huh.
And of course, you want your friends to come see the show, and mm-hmm. it's in that city, so you're going to stop by and you're going to talk about the show. But when you're visiting friends, you might be partying and drinking, so you might forget about said marketing purpose. That might have happened.
I don't know what you're talking about.
And, you know, boobs are distracting.
There were a lot of attractive women there.
There really were.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but, you know, this is what our weekend looked like. We rushed down on Friday, and, you know, your friends are taking care of you. You're not staying at a hotel, which is awesome.
And our friends are very, very gracious, and we're very thankful for their efforts.
That being said, what you don't pay in money, you pay in time. Mm-hmm. So Friday evening and part of Saturday, you know, and even part of Sunday ends up being dedicated to making sure that the people that are being kind enough to let you stay there are not feeling like they're being taken advantage
of. Being used for the space.
So that in itself has to be actually budgeted in terms of time. I know that sounds terrible, but it's true.
Well, I mean, time is money. They're mm-hmm. equivalent, and everything is on a budget. And so...
And then you gotta space out the parties. You know you're going to two parties. You know you gotta get to one party before everyone gets naked. For one of two reasons. You might be going to that party before they get naked so that you can join in on the getting naked, or you might be doing that so that you can leave when the nudity starts. Yes?
I'm pleading the fifth, so don't go asking me questions.
So we like to get to the party at... You know, I am married and in a monogamous marriage, so I like to head to the party before it gets to a certain point, because I love my friends. I don't love my friends, you know?
I, on the other hand, as an unattached, single, heterosexual male, was kind of like, whatever. I was like, hey, you know, I might see some pudenda, and I might not, and I'm okay with that.
So that
means... I'm here for the pirate costumes. This is
awesome. So we go from party number one. We're having a great time. Yeah. And we love them. They're like family. And they were certainly having a rip-roaring time.
Super fun, classy crowd. It was great.
And it was hard to leave because they were still having a good time. And we go to another party, having a great time, different vibe.
Yeah.
And they ended up not getting naked so fast. So we ended up staying there until like 2:30 in the morning, I think it was. Something insane like that?
Well, you say that like we were waiting to see pudenda.
No, no, no.
It's like, okay, wait, we were going to leave at midnight, but we waited until 2:30 and didn't see so much as a belly button.
No, I just...
Oh, man, one girl showed me her ankles and I was done.
Okay, some people party till they drop. I party till someone drops their pants. And then I kindly say goodbye. That's kind of more what I meant.
I think you've seen me walk around without pants fairly often, and you stay the course.
Hold on. Are you sure I'm not wearing my sunglasses or turning the other direction?
I'm counting it. Well, I mean, on the Intervision YouTube page, there's actually a great video of...
nips.
When I was blasting the nips.
Oh, now, no.
Because you made me shave. You said, oh, your shadow is showing on stage.
Yeah, it was.
So you better shave. And so I was back there...
I didn't mean shave your nips. I just meant your face.
No, my face. My face. Okay. No man will shave my nips, and no women neither. But no, I'm back there because I have to shave super quick because showtime is in like less than 40 minutes, I think, at that point.
Yeah.
And but we also do vocal warm-ups, which are mandatory. Otherwise, I get the Hulk fist. So, you know, I'm back there and I have just put the finishing touches on my face, but I've nicked myself a few times. So I'm pressing a towel to my face and I run out still shirtless because I was shaving shirtless like a decent person. And I come out and we're doing vocal warm-ups, which is a duet between Ghislaine and myself. And she just gives me this look like this is really how this is going to go down, isn't it?
And this is what happens when you're the director and you're in the show.
And this is what happens.
What people do to you.
This is what happens when you're an actor and you have nipples. people see them at some point. And so, so that was a fun little moment where I completely either ruined or enhanced that vocal warm up. Now I think I enhanced it because it was really great for your improv.
Oh, yes.
Because there's some improv going on in that pre-show of Mickey and Worm, the show that we're putting on tour in San Diego, about this time, well, about 3 weeks from the time that you're hearing this, there's a lot of drama and a lot of comedy, but there's some improv that goes on in there especially between Ghislaine and myself. And so I like to foster that and strengthen that by the use of my nipples.
the most amusing part about this is I play Annabelle, this character who hasn't been working very long at the club, and she has established a short-term relationship with the club owner,
myself, Lou.
And she is quite enamored and is basically both to keep her job going as well as because this is kind of in her nature, very attached when there hasn't been enough time for these two to be attached. And on top of that,
she's sort of a U-Haul.
She's a bit of a drunk, you know, on top of it. So there's that. So,
well, pro tip, everybody in Mickey and Worm is a bit of a drunk.
Okay, but not everyone can handle their booze. And Annabelle's an example of someone who cannot handle her booze.
Like, when she's singing, she's A-okay, but as soon as that that responsibility is taken off her shoulders, suddenly it's, how you doing?
She doesn't quite do that, but so, yeah, that does kind of come close.
And that is the show that we are marketing.
Yeah, come see me drunk.
Yes, come see Ghislaine drunk, and come see me being a functional drunk, and also playing the part of Lou Atwater, the owner of the Club Royale.
Well, I was...
That was a joke, because I'm crying for help.
Right. Well, also what I think was really, what's something that people don't understand that we like to talk about on this show is that there are producer struggles, right?
Yes.
You know, and we call them producer pains, and...
because whenever you're being a producer, I'm in pain.
vice versa.
You're a pain in my producer.
Ain't that the truth? Oh. But, you know, not everybody wants to couch surf everywhere they go.
I do.
Or sleep on a futon on the floor.
Well, I think couches are great.
You know, meeting strange cats and dogs that sleep on your face.
I like cats.
Going straight from, you know, a meeting with your friends partying to having to put on the serious face with the Elks Lodge, for example, and they're handing you, like, triple pours of scotch.
And a nice, nice, tall red ale.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
Which sounds fantastic, but you try to have a business meeting on a triple pour scotch and not sound like you're slurring at the end.
Okay.
Challenge accepted.
Challenge accepted. The challenger appears. Hadouken!
And then we have the long drives, and we sing in the car.
Yes.
And Wolf is subject to Ryan's playlist.
Well, and then you're subject to mine.
A little bit, because I don't know half the songs.
Yes, well, that's...
And you just finally sing.
Yeah.
Which, well, I'm wanting to sing along.
Well, here's the thing. Sometimes, in order to pass the time, I have to sing in the car. That's just a thing that you understand.
Yes.
Other times, I need to let someone else do the talking. And so I put on music, and I allow it to move me. And I also allow the car to move me because I've got my foot on the gas pedal.
So, you're okay with me singing all the songs in the car, too?
No.
Oh. So, you just want the other people to sing in the car, or you to sing, and me to just sit there? Yeah, you could just suck it.
I think you've hit the nail on the head.
Hulk fist coming your way.
No!
By the way, we creatively work together and compose and write and sing.
And we have a ton of fun. But I also hate her.
And when I sing in the car.
And I hate
her. Which I won't stop.
I mean, I pretty much hate everything about you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
That means I'm awesome.
And there's no conclusion to that sentence. Like, I hate everything about you, but have it. No, I just.
You just loathe me.
Hate everything about you. The one thing I like about you, your home has a red Hulk fist in it.
Oh, that is true.
Yeah, that thing that you've been chasing me around the room with.
That's right.
It's kind of terrible.
You just be careful. Oh, you bend over 1 second, it's over.
You gotta get a load of this thing, viewers at home, for who are viewing with their ears. It's kind of cruel, this device. Anyhoozle. So, we have long drives, we've got marketing to do, which, again, is basically firing the marketing gun like a sniper. You've got to go places and meet people, look them in the eye, and say, hi, can I drop off some flyers here?
And not feel like a jerk. And what about handling, like, talking to your drunk friends, singing drunk karaoke, and wanting to hand them a flyer without being a schmo?
Well, this crowd, you might be able to just slip it into their brassieres. and they would thank you for the advance.
Well, actually, if you had, we should have done a contest of people to make bras and undies out of our flyers.
Yes.
And that would have won over.
Oh, shoot, we didn't play the underpants game.
We did not play the underpants game.
Oh, lame.
That would have fixed everything.
That sucks. You heard it here first, folks. The underpants game.
I have an idea.
Let's change the subject!
And now, word rants with Wolfman Dave. For those of us who still read and write more than just emoticons.
We have blue language, purple prose, and yellow journalism. These refer, respectively, to cussing and blasphemy, excessively and distractingly florid language, and eye-catching but ultimately spurious newscasting. Mm. Recently, although it's not exactly common parlance yet, I have also heard of green speech, which apparently means ecological speech and debate. Are we missing other colors? Why not orange oration for the warning coming from crazy conspiracy theorists? Or maybe red rhetoric for the language of internet trolls? And is there space for patterns in there as well? Could we have houndstooth chatter for debates between people at the exact opposite lunatic fringes of an issue? Maybe plaid patter for the kind of talking people do when they switch to a different accent when they're drunk. I mean, we've got a lot of language. Think of all the creative ways we have of indexing how we talk about how we talk.
Word Rants with Wolfman Dave. Red rhetoric for the soul.
Well, looks like our friend Genie the Giant Killer is here from Bad Gas Pal to share some important life advice.
Oh, seriously? Her again?
Yes, and it doesn't cost us to book her for the show.
Oh, right. Welcome. Welcome, Genie.
Yes, welcome, Genie. Now tell us a bit more about your advice column, Bad Gas Pal.
Thank you, Wolfman Dave. Thank you, Ghislaine. I'm so excited to be here. Is that a Red Hulk fist?
Yes, it is. We keep it on hand in case anyone gets out of line. I'm not explaining that. Anyway, what is Bad Gas Pal?
It's short for boys are dumb, girls are stupid, and people are lame. Basically, my philosophy on life.
Hmm. And you use this philosophy to give advice on real-world problems.
Oh, not just real-world problems. It also helps with fictional characters. They have feelings too, you know.
Fictional characters?
Does Superman give you a call?
Talk to Neo the Chosen One lately?
Are you kidding? Neo has me on speed dial. That guy's got issues.
I can believe that. We have a letter that came in today, wondering if you'd entertain it.
Oh, sounds great. Bring it on.
Okay. I just went out to my car to get something that apparently fell out of my purse yesterday. Anyway, I had just gotten up, and my hair's on top of my head, and I'm in a messy bun, and I'm wearing a huge comfy plush robe, because it's freaking chilly. A giant loud-ass truck drives by me standing in the street while I'm bent over searching under the seats, and I notice the truck slowed down for some reason, so I stood up and looked. The windows were tinted, but I could clearly see two shadows in the front seat practically breaking their necks to look back my way.
They got to the stop sign and turned, and I found my missing phone charger plug, and I started to lock the car and head back up towards my house. Uh-huh. And I get to where I need to cross, and I hear the same truck coming around.
Oh, no.
And it comes around my street the second time. This time, the windows are down, and they pull to the side to let me cross the street in front of them. And as I'm stepping into my driveway, I hear the driver say, "Damn, girl, hit me up." I'm gonna stop right there and see what your thoughts are so far.
Well, boys are dumb. Mm. Like, girls are waiting around for some stalker truck with tinted windows to pick them up. Hello? Most chicks aren't into creepy guys. Unless? Well, unless the guys were cute. Girls are stupid. A truck with tinted windows that turns around deliberately when I'm in a vulnerable state screams, "Where's my sword?" to me. But some girls do not find good-looking guys to be a threat.
Going off what I'm reading here, that was actually a really good guess.
I wasn't guessing. Boys are dumb, girls are stupid, people are lame.
Okay.
It's as simple as that. So, what happened with the truck?
She writes, let me get back into character. I'm stepping into my driveway, I hear the driver say, "Damn, girl, hit me up." And I laugh and I look back, these guys are hot. Does this mean I still got it?
I think she's gonna get it if she's not more careful.
Another helpful tidbit of advice from Jeannie the Giant Killer. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, guys.
Tune in next week when she answers the infamous question, "Do you think she likes me?"
Well, do you?
No.
No.
And now, time for Geeky Gossip with the guys. Joining us is Ryan Phillips, producer here at Intervision Entertainment.
Hi, Ryan.
Hey, Ryan.
Hello.
So, let's see. We're talking about Back to the Future today, yes, to include the Marty Paradox, mm-hmm, and the Flex Capacitor.
The Flex Capacitor.
The Flex, yeah, Capacitor.
It's the Flux Capacitor, first of all.
It sounds like yoga in a box when you say it.
The Flex Capacitor is actually a, I'm thinking of a treadmill that allows you to run at 88 miles per hour.
I was thinking of one of those little, like, hand grip things, but instead of you squeezing it, it squeezes you to bend you into higher and to, you know, make you more flexible.
It squeezes you through time. Like, yeah, it works you out so hard that you have the body you had 10 years ago. Now, for some of us who have gotten a little soggy about the midsection, that'll be great.
Or it makes your workout feel like it took forever and it was only been, like, 3 seconds. Or, you're like, oh my god, how long have I been doing this?
No, it actually condenses time so you can do a 30-minute workout in 8 seconds.
Oh.
Think about it. Think, like, of the time you'd save.
Like 6-minute abs.
8-second abs.
8-second abs.
You have, like, in relative time, you have to put in the whole half hour, but by the end of it, it's like, hey, I can go to work.
Those Isn't that the whole point of a rodeo? 8-second abs?
Oh dear.
Now I really want a Flex Capacitor.
I want a Flex Capacitor.
Okay, so tell us more about the Flux Capacitor.
Well, my problem with the Flux Capacitor is the fact that the problem is 88 miles per hour. Now, if you're traveling through time, you have to, like, you see these sparks of light come off of it as if it's, you know, cutting through three-dimensional space in order to get where it's going.
Right.
Why would if we're talking about things, speeds approaching those which bend the laws of space and time, what difference does a piddly 88 miles an hour take?
Well, I really think 88 miles an hour was just something he built into the car as, like, the trigger. And I get that from when the show, he's got the remote, and he says,
in the first movie, he's got the remote,
if you're going to build a time machine out of a car, why not do it with some style? And you see the tires spinning as he's revving it up. And the on the remote, the
the speedometer on his remote
is going up, even though the car is sitting still.
It's revving in space, rather. Yeah.
Yeah, I always just thought that was a trigger he built in because, you know, in 85, your chances of hitting 88 miles an hour, unless you're doing it on purpose, are pretty low. Yeah. And he wanted to be cool.
Well, why couldn't he be cool at like 22 miles an hour?
Well, he could, except that every time you, like, got into a school zone, you'd slow down and bam, you travel.
Yeah, how many lowriders would be just flying through time?
Lowrider. Right. Flying through time.
Because if you're going to be cool in a car, you either want to be driving at, like, 2 miles an hour so everybody sees you, you're waving, you're just there, everybody's watching, or you want to be flying by.
Well, so
there really isn't much in between.
I find your logic mildly spurious, and I'll tell you why. Doc Brown is not a paragon of style.
No, he's not cool.
But he wants to be.
You've seen his haircut. You've seen the Ronald McDonald suit that he wears while he's testing. And even as a younger man back in 1955, he was sort of a fuddy-duddy. And the DeLorean, as cool as you might think a DeLorean is, it's got all this weird stuff tacked on the outside of it.
Oh, that's also how the time machine works.
I'm aware of that, but if you want to do a DeLorean with style, you put all the stuff in the boot, in the trunk. You don't have it sticking off the top.
When engineers want to be cool, they take their machines to extreme.
Yeah, but it still has to look cool.
But you're talking about a engineer who doesn't know a lot about fashion. It's just like
right. So I think our argument prevails.
Or to follow your logic, a meager fashionista who doesn't know a lot about engineering.
Ooh.
I don't know what that means.
So in his mind, just a car that goes really fast is awesome. Versus trying to think about how it looks.
Well, I guess it's hard to do it on accident. You're right. That you can accidentally... I mean, I get in my car and I touch it and it's going 40. I can accidentally hit 40. I have to think about it to get to 88 miles an hour.
Right, because you're almost 90.
To the California Highway Patrol, I don't think about it often.
Not at all.
Right. never happens. It stays neatly below the speed limit of 65 miles an hour or what is currently posted in the area.
Yes.
But
however, if the CHP would like to sponsor this podcast...
Oh, they don't do that.
Yes, they do. I see them sponsoring the D.A.R.E. program all the time.
And they do the clean up the roads.
Clean up the roads?
Why are we talking...
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads!
They're clearly buying those millions of dollars of bumper stickers they put on the back.
Oh, boy. This got off track fast.
So let's talk about
speaking of tracks, actually, there are two situations that violate your logic. Because in the first movie, it's that, okay, maybe the wheels just need to be spinning fast enough
right.
for the speedometer to think it's going 88 miles an hour. But the second time round, the car can fly, and in the third film, they move the whole car itself with a locomotive.
Mm-hmm.
So those are two very distinct methods of locomotion that got the car up to 88 miles an hour. It seems to me like the whole unit has to be going 88 miles an hour.
Well, they've already got the 88 miles an hour in their head, and they're not thinking, wait a second, I just got to get the car to think it's going 88 miles an hour. There's a lot of things like that in life where there's this really simple solution that nobody ever thinks of.
So you're saying it's like Lord of the Rings. If the Eagles had just flown in sooner, we would be fine.
There's a reason for that. They made a deal, and that deal ended as soon as the Eagles got them out of trouble. Thank you very much.
Right, but it's exactly like that. What if the Eagles...
Info at Intervision Entertainment for all of your queries about the deal that Gandalf the Grey made with the Eagles. Because that's actual canon, and I'm... biggest dork in this room. You were saying, Mr. Phillips.
Well, I'm saying that happens all the time in film where it's like, oh, well, if he'd had just done this, he wouldn't have had to do all the entire movie wouldn't have had to happen.
So you mean that how it should have ended series is pretty accurate?
Yeah, it happens all the time.
I mean, the how it should have ended is the best way to ruin a movie. But I do mean the best.
So have you watched the Back to the Future, how it should have ended?
No, it'll break my poor black little heart.
Now, what if you put a flux capacitor on the Eagle where they have to be, where they have to be diving down and get hit by a bolt of lightning to travel through time?
They have to dive at... an Eagle can actually dive that speed.
Right, but would he also have to get... He'd have to...
Okay, Gandalf the Grey summons a storm with his magic, and his staff is a lightning rod that he uses to strike the eagle with a bolt of lightning when the eagle is in an 88-mile-an-hour dive.
Well, he's a wizard. Can't he just, like, throw a bolt of lightning at it?
Yes, he summons a storm and strikes him
with a bolt of lightning.
Yes, Mr. Baggins, one needs 1.21 gigawatts.
What were we talking about?
Oh, see, now you've got me completely off topic.
Yes.
When he's flying, he just adds in some sort of whatever they use on airplanes to measure the speed.
Yeah.
And then when he goes back in time, they're trapped in this paradigm of thinking, I have to get the car moving at 88 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And Doc is not big on details. He makes this thing, but...
Well, he figured out one way that it worked, and that's fine.
Right, and he's not really thinking of outside the box of, you know, what if I just push it off a cliff?
Yeah.
And
put it on the back of an eagle in an 88-mile-an-hour dive.
Back there again. Okay, so let's talk about the Marty paradox.
Well, the Marty I'm still not satisfied about the flux capacitor.
Oh, damn it!
Well, it's the point is the end result of all of that is it has plot armor. The flux capacitor has plot armor around right. it that, you know, the rule is 88 miles an hour because the plot says so.
Yeah, the script says so.
Yeah.
So, in other words, neither one of you is sure who's correct.
I am sure that I'm correct that it's because the plot says so.
Oh, well, yeah, obviously. But yeah. I think the in movie physics, though, is just random. It 88 miles an hour just seemed cool, so they yeah. went with it. So yeah. anyway, the Marty paradox. You believe in the multi timeline theory of Back to the Future.
Now, can you summarize this? And when I say summarize,
yeah, well, the basic idea is that at the beginning of the movie, you're in timeline one. When Marty goes back in time and changes things, and he shows up at the end of the first movie, and everything is sparkly and awesome, that's timeline two. That he has gone to another dimension where things started out differently because he had interfered in the past, and when he returns to what he thinks is the present, things are just different because he himself changed the past. That this is a second parallel dimension to the first one that is distinct, it has its own history, that Marty doesn't remember. That's the important thing, is Marty remembers everything from timeline one when he's in timeline two. He thinks that his dad is supposed to be a chump, but it turns out his dad is a total rock star that has a billion dollar book deal, that Biff is this castrati that's now in service to the McFly family, his mom is still in good health, his brothers and sisters are happy, that everything is super duper cool in
if
timeline.
If he's got a $1 billion book deal, why is he still living in the same house?
He likes it.
It's decorated.
It's fun.
It's nicer.
Hey, it was a nice house. That was a cool little crash pad.
Lyons Estates were
fancy. How did the first George McFly afford that then? From timeline one.
They weren't poor. He was just stupid.
He wasn't even stupid. He was just a wimp.
Yeah.
He didn't really go for more than... And they were in... The house was in trouble, too.
They
were
true.
Worried about losing the place, I
know
think.
No, that's like...
And so, in timeline two, it's that he can comfortably afford this. And if I were that rich, I would do the same. I'd buy a little place and
so
just hang out.
So, to save our house, we just need to send someone back in time.
Right.
Right?
While a Huey Lewis in the News song is playing.
Okay.
I think that's important.
Yes, that's very important. So, my postulate here, my position here, is that Marty 1 is from a timeline... the timeline that you see at the start of the first movie, he's in a totally different dimension by the time the movie ends. Mm-hmm. He's in a different place that he doesn't remember. He is an alien there.
Ooh.
Because in timeline two, Marty 2 went back in time and changed stuff, and now he's in yet another timeline. So my wonder is that if that is true, one, either timeline one has a Marty that just disappeared and never came back, his family is distraught, nobody ever saw him again, and life is even more terrible. Or there's another Marty that changed the past and came back to a future that was that crappy. Like, that was just this horrible future,
you know,
where his dad's a wimp and his mom sucks.
I've always looked at those three movies as one of the closed-loop time frames, like in Terminator.
Mm-hmm.
And what got me there was actually Back to the Future Part 2.
Uh-huh.
And a few things from one, like the mayor getting inspired to actually run for mayor.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And but Biff steals the car, goes back to 1955, and then brings it back to the current timeline.
Oh, he goes to the same one, yeah.
Yeah, it comes back to the same one, not the one that's changed.
And it's weird because that 2015 is not implied by the past that he had created.
Right. Which makes me think it's all a closed loop, and it's just one timeline, but rather than going in a straight line, it's actually looping back on itself, and all these things have to happen.
There is one timeline where 1955 just happens a few times.
Right.
Oh, that's trippy.
Yeah, it's the term, they call it closed loop, I call it the Terminator timeline.
Yeah,
where in order for the future to actually play out, it has to
loop
back.
The future has to interfere with the past.
Right. It's like, rather than being a straight string, it's been crocheted.
Yeah. But Doc actually lays it out in Back to the Future 2.
That's what he thinks the science is. He doesn't know for sure.
Oh, so we're dealing with an unreliable narrator here.
Right. I mean, he says, my theory.
Oh, no. We all know what happens when someone says they have
and
a theory.
He doesn't have all the supporting evidence he has for that theory he lays out is just the fact that We went back and we ended up on a different timeline. But very clearly, Biff went back and then went forward again and ended up in the same timeline.
And somehow future Biff just has to deal with it and trust that he's... Future Biff is the best character in the series. He did something for another human being that manifested no benefit for himself.
Clearly, he gave...
Think about it. Oh, that's super cool.
Well, yeah. And
way to go, Biff.
Yeah,
way to go, future Biff.
And think about it. Marty got greedy. I mean, Marty didn't even remember that the Cubs won the World Series in 2015. You think, being that hard up for money in 2015,
yeah.
He would have gone back to Las Vegas at like the beginning of baseball season and went, I'm going to put everything I have on the Cubs winning the World Series by a sweep in October. Because you get great odds on that.
Shoot. Something I have never thought before this moment. Future Marty does not seem to have a memory of traveling into the past.
That's true.
That supports
your hypothesis.
Yes, yes. In that timeline, that Marty had never gone on this adventure.
Think about it.
That Marty was just as much of a loser as Marty One's dad had been.
Yeah.
Well, they did say that George McFly had never been a loser because but that Marty became one when he hurt his hand. But for some reason, you're right. He never remembered being in 1985 and going forward in time.
It didn't occur to him to either look up Doc or track down his research to go back in time and try to fix things for himself and his family.
But did you notice that Doc was just doing an experiment? That he pulls out that newspaper after it's changed and went, my theory's correct.
Yes.
He wasn't doing that to help Marty. He was doing that... as a research project.
Yeah, just as scientific inquiry. And one component of one of his theories manifested positive consequences.
Correct.
And that was the first test.
Exactly.
That's all you get. And science requires repetition.
And for that matter, how far forward did he ever go?
At least 2015, I imagine. Far enough forward that he got the power source he needed, and that was about to continue his research.
He kind of stopped there, which is only about 15 years.
So we're dealing... I think my theory has support that Marty... There are several Martys in play here from different timelines, different dimensions that have no knowledge of each other.
I think both theories have some support. What we really need to do is kidnap Steven Spielberg... and make him next week's guest.
Make him talk! I mean, interview him. Interview him for the show.
All right, guys, I have an idea.
Yes?
Let's change the subject!
And now, for the Intervision update. This month, the amazing duo of Wolfman Dave and Ghislaine will be singing for the medieval-themed wedding of Brian Knight and April Drake. I don't know how I got signed up for it, but apparently my reputation has preceded me just enough to get the job. Ghislaine had nothing whatsoever to do with it other than getting us the gig.
Pickup rehearsals are about to begin for the upcoming San Diego dates of Mickey and Worm Tour. Not to be mistaken for the upcoming porno, Mickey's Worm, coming to an adult bookstore near you.
Artists from Intervision Entertainment are heading off to the E-Spot Lounge for the Sheila E. Combat Radio broadcast featuring Harrison Ellenshaw, special effects artist from Mary Poppins, Star Wars, Tron, and more. This is a great event for raising money for the LA Food Bank, as well as the other wonderful things Combat Radio does, to include putting up with us at their events.
Dia de los Muertos is coming to Strathern Park from 4 to 8 p.m. in Simi Valley this November 1st, with vendors, face painting, and storytelling from the famous True Thomas. You should come.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not biased.
Mm-mm.
I'm just performing it.
Yeah!
Near Banbridge Town in the county, down one morning last July, down the boring green came sweet Kylene, and she smiled as she passed me by. She looked so neat in her two white feet and the sheen in her nut's brown hair. Such a coaxing elf, sure I shook myself to be sure I was standing there.
From Bantry Bay to the Derry King, and from Galway to Dublin Town, no maid I've seen like the fair Kylene that I met in the county down.
As she onward sped, sure I shook my head and awoke with a feeling queer. said I to a passerby, who's your maid with the nut brown hair? He smiled at me and he said he, she's the gem in old Ireland crown. Young April Drake from the land of the lake and the star of the county down.
From Bantry Bay to the Derry Kay and from Galway to Dublin town. No maid I've seen like the fair Colleen that I met in the county down. At the crossroads fair, she'll be surely there, so I'll dress in me Sunday clothes. With me hat caught right, and me shoes shone bright, for a smile from me nut brown rose. No pipe I'll smoke, no horse I'll yoke, till the rust in me plough turn brown. And the smiling bride at my own fireside, she's the star of the county down. From Bantry Bay to the Derry King, and from Galway to Dublin town. No maid I've seen like the fair Colleen that I met in the county town.
And now we'd like to welcome to our studio Mac Bouvet, actress, model, cosplayer, podcaster, and all-around artist extraordinaire. Greetings, Mac, and welcome to our studio.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Wonderful to have you. We have a little list of questions we like to ask our guests, and this is the first. What did you have for lunch today?
I was really busy at work today, so I didn't actually have lunch.
Oh, no.
That sounds about right.
I had a bag of baked Cheetos. That was about as close to lunch as I got today.
Hey, that counts. A bag of Cheetos... Hey, and if Cheetos would like to sponsor us, we would be grateful for that. that is considered a meal in my book. Okay, next question. What would you consider your first art project, and how did that inspire you to do more?
Oh gosh, like very first from childhood?
You betcha.
Oh my god. Man, that's hard, because I was doing a lot of stuff as a kid, so it's a little hard to really lock it down to one. I don't remember... what was first. I remember having a jewelry kit when I was a kid, and I was crazy about making jewelry pieces, but I think at the same time I also had a makeup kit that my mother had bought me, and so I was doing makeovers on myself and my friends, and I have drawn for as long as I can remember. So it was all kind of happening simultaneously, and I never really gave up on having that sort of enthusiasm for doing as many different things as I possibly could.
Well, that definitely explains your artistry now. And now, how did that inspire you to do more art now? Like, you know, where do you think the inspiration came from?
You know, I'm not really sure. I think that's true of a lot of artists, though, is that it's hard to know exactly where that source is from. I've always had a really... active imagination and really just like to kind of go into my own fantasy world and play make-believe and pretend. And I never gave up on that. I still do that now. Whenever I start on an art project, it's playing make-believe. It's playing dress-up. It's, you know, imagining things. So that's really driven me through all of this, is just my ability to create these worlds for myself.
Excellent. Now, next question. Are you a cat person, dog person, other? Let's talk about pets.
I actually like pretty much all animals except for monkeys and insects. They're pretty much like people, and I don't really like people that much to begin with.
Insects. So you're not a people person.
Stinging and venom involved there. But cat versus dog, I mean, I've had... cats and dogs. I love them both equally. I could also be called a rat person because I've had rats. I have an obsession with werewolves and wolves. Is werewolf person an option?
You know, you can pick werewolves because it's you.
Say, you got one right here in the studio, and I hear you're quite attractive.
Yeah, you are speaking to someone called Wolfman.
That is true.
Yeah.
by the way, follow-up question. Do you like fish? Because we've got some to give away, and we've got a whole tank that we're trying to get rid of.
I like fish, I like eating them better than I like having them as pets.
So, well, we have a good place for you to keep them while you're waiting to to eat them.
Yeah, I'm having a feeling that the fish that are available for this particular inquiry are not going to be delicious. So,
you don't know that.
Pass.
You're gonna pass on that. Okay. Right. What is your current day job, and do you feel it is still artistic?
So I work in licensing. I'm a product development manager. So I work on product development for a few different properties. There is some creativity involved because I help guide the licensees to figure out ways to make their product better, to improve color, work on the art balance. I could be very easily in this position. Somebody just pushes buttons or says, oh, this doesn't fit with, you know, our standards, and I'm rejecting it. But for me, it's really about diving into the creative and really helping make the product that's ultimately going to be on shelves the best that it can be, and it may be something different that the consumer hasn't seen before.
Very awesome.
Like it.
Yeah, I've been working in licensing for the past like 9 years now, so I've got a pretty hefty amount of experience with that.
So you're saying your day job actually pays your bills?
Yeah, it definitely keeps the lights on and food in the fridge and all that good stuff.
And yet, licensing is one of those funny things where you can tell me in very small words what it means, and I can still come away not quite understanding it.
That's the way for most people. Licensing's kind of its own weird subsection of jobs.
My cousin works in licensing, and he is so weird and mysterious about it. In fact, I think you actually speak more openly than he does about it.
It depends on what you're working on and what properties and what types of products. There are a lot of instances, and I've worked on a lot of projects, where I couldn't talk about it, and if it got out that I was talking about it, I'd be in breach and possibly lose my job over it. It's very serious business when you're working on highly secretive properties.
Man.
Fair enough.
It still strikes me as one of those jobs like Barney Stinson, where if you ask him what he does, he just says, oh, please.
Yeah, you kind of are a Barney Stinson or a Chandler. A Chandler. I don't know what you do.
Any hoozle.
Yeah.
It's funny because there's lots of different variations within licensing. I mean, the easiest way is I always tell people I help make merchandise. You know, for films, the stuff that you would go in and buy at a Hot Topic or at a Target, that really is what it boils down to. It just matters what side of the equation you're on. If you are you own the rights, if you're somebody that's manufacturing off of it, if you're a middleman. So there's a lot of variables, and there isn't a class for it when you go to college. There isn't, I'm going to be a licensing person. Almost everyone I know falls into it one way or another.
Well, I went to school to be a podcaster, and now here I am. There are next question. There are 168 hours in a week. How many of those do you spend outside of your day job working on your art?
Almost all of them in some way, shape, or form. Because I leave my day job and rush off to the next thing. Even when I go home and I'm kind of relaxing, I'm still often working on a project, or I'm watching a movie, which I feel, you know, watching movies and television helps me as a creative person to sort of absorb what other people have created and come up with my own ideas off of it. Hell, I don't even really rest when I try to sleep.
Well, I didn't actually think you slept. I thought you were more of a vampire werewolf type anyway.
Yeah, I attempt to sleep, but sleep and I are not on very good terms most of the time. And I'm one of those people that I have to have something nearby in bed if I have that idea while I'm attempting to fall asleep so I can write it down. And I wake up with ideas and inspiration. My brain never really shuts off.
You know, it's funny because I think artists do that a lot. Part of what I was saying, you know, the quintessential image of an artist is someone sleeping in bed all day long and not doing anything. And people have this kind of terrible image and imagery for what the artist is. And I don't think that's true. I think artists work day jobs and barely can pay their bills and spend the rest of their time working really hard to make their art and rarely sleep. I don't know any artists who sleep, actually.
And you seem to be the exemplar of that.
For sure. Okay, I got another question for you.
It's definitely one of those things where it's just... even when it looks like an artist is inactive, very often it's just that they're kind of inside of their own head creating something. It never really stops.
No, it doesn't, does it?
Around here we call it percolating.
All right, I've got a really important question for you, and I want you to really think about it, okay? Now, because we know you've explored numerous...
options here.
Options here. What is your favorite hair color?
For myself, yes.
We're not supposed to laugh at our own jokes. Anyway, let's try that again.
Yes.
You can laugh, we can't laugh. Okay, let's try that again.
Sorry about that. I didn't really understand the significance of that question until we got to it.
Okay.
Oh, man.
Let's try this again. So I have a really important question for you, and I really want you to think about it because you've explored many options. What is your favorite hair color?
All right, and we're talking about on myself or in general?
It can be either.
Whatever comes to your mind first.
Honestly, for me, I always go back to red. I'm actually looking at doing that again very, very soon. It's time to give the green a break. I love changing it up, but I always, always come back to red. That's where my heart lies, is being a ginger.
Now, you're actually looking at going Lucille Ball henna red, right?
Yeah, I want to take it very gingery, which is a bit brighter than my natural hair color, which is sort of a dark auburn, but I haven't seen it in any significant quantities in a very long time.
And your hair is green right now.
Yep.
Yeah.
She's kind of a mermaid. I haven't seen my natural hair color because my hair's gone away. All right, now, that last question we wanted you to think very hard about. This one, we want your just knee-jerk reaction. Are you ready?
Okay.
Okay, so the topic of today's podcast is Back to the Future. Now, flying cars, hoverboards, or holographic movies? You can only have one. Choose now.
Flying car.
Flying car.
And why?
Well... number one, I panicked because I had to think about that really fast. But actually, flying car for me would be more I want one and not to have everybody else have one. So I can just fly over traffic because I hate everyone.
Mac Beauvais, hire her today because she hates people. Wait, what?
I've learned to live with them, but it doesn't mean that I have to like them.
She will work hard and hate you. Hire her now.
Well, you know, the best humanitarians don't like people. Well, thank you so much, Mac, for joining us today. We really appreciated having you.
Wonderful to have you.
So, Mac, if people want to know more about what you're doing and, you know, besides licensing, and the actual artistry you're up to.
And how to find you.
Yes, how do they find you?
I'm online pretty much everywhere as Strange Like That. So it's strangelikethat.com, at Strange Like That, Strange Like That Invades Your Dreams. That's the easiest way to find me. And from there, you can find all of my other projects. Projects? I don't even know. That's not even a word. But you can find all of my other projects as well.
Excellent.
I added like an X in there. I don't know how I managed that.
We'd like to close this show with the approximate hour's thought of the day. Take it away, Wolfman.
People talk about political unrest, but what does political rest look like?
And that's our show. Join us next week as we discuss the challenges of being the only people in the room that were not nominated for Emmys. I'm Ghislaine.
And I'm Wolfman, signing off. And I don't have an Emmy.
The approximate hour. The approximate hour.